Hello, folks. I'm here to tell you about HelloGiggles.com. Founded by actress, musician Zoe Dashnell, producer Sophia Rossi, and blogger web personality Molly McAleer, HelloGiggles.com is the ultimate entertainment destination for smart, independent, and creative females. Everything hosted on the site will be lady-friendly, so visitors need not worry about finding the standard boys club content that makes many entertainment sites so unappealing to so many of us. So if you want to find out some entertainment news, entertainment facts, entertainment things for ladies, go on down to HelloGiggles.com. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great show for you guys today. It is a doubleheader with two different bands I did on Skype. First up, I talked to Tommy Siegel from the band Nark Twain in Brooklyn, New York. Their album is out today. It's their debut EP, and you can find them on SoundCloud and Twitter. Nark Twain is kind of a collective of dudes from other bands in New York City. And they decided to get together and make this sort of like high energy rock and roll music. And Tommy plays in a couple of other bands that are art collectives, kind of a Jukebox the Ghost, which is a piano driven pop band, and then Drunken Sufis, which is an art collective. Anyway, we have a great conversation, and Tommy's a great guy. Their album, as I said, is out today, so look them up. Nark Twain from Brooklyn, New York. And then after that, I talked to artist Sam Means. You can find his music at sammeansmusic.com. He is from Phoenix, Arizona, and he has a new album coming out January 22nd, 2016, called 10 Songs. It was produced by the great Stephen McDonald from Red Cross. We have a great conversation, man. He used to meet a band called The Format with Nate Roos, the singer from Fun. The band Fun, you know them. He also owns a merchandise company called HelloMerch.com, and we just have a great conversation. It's interesting because he hasn't played a show as a solo artist yet. So we have a great conversation about that, about getting it together. How's he going to do that? How's he going to represent this great music that he's just made? All right, we figure it all out. We have a great conversation. Stick around. This doubleheader Skype conversation with these two dudes from out of town is coming up in just a minute. Before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. I moderated this panel the other night for the Austin Music Foundation about booking regional, local, and national shows. It was an interesting panel. My friend Einar was on it, one of my best friends. Played together for years. He plays bass with Kelly Clarkson. My friend Charlie Fay, who's been on the show a few times, she was there. She was talking on behalf of the artist. And then there was a booking agent named Laura Thomas from Combo Play Booking. And there was a lot of questions from the audience. And it was good, man. I thought it was really informative. We did record it for the podcast, but unfortunately, there was so much audience interaction that without the audience questions and comments, without a microphone, it didn't come through. So we're not going to be able to release it, sadly. Hopefully, next time I moderate one, I will be able to record it and we will get it to you. And you'll be able to find out some stuff. It's a great, Austin Music Foundation is a great organization. They help you get your shit together. Like if you don't know what you're doing with your band, you don't know what you're doing with your music, you don't know what you're going to do with your getting gigs or putting out a record, getting press, getting radio, all this stuff, they are able to guide you. There are mentors there. You can set up mentoring sessions. Go to austinmusicfoundation.org. If you are an Austin musician, sadly, Sam Means and Tommy Siegel live in different cities where they don't have this kind of infrastructure. We got a lot of stuff going on. Okay. So if you live in Austin, you're trying to figure out what to do, check out the austinmusicfoundation.org and get some help. Other than that, there's another nonprofit, and I'm doing a red carpet interviews today for the Black Fret Black Ball Gala going on over at the Paramount Theater here in Austin. So I've got a busy day. I don't know if I really want to be out in the cold, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to suck it up and maybe go have a drink with my friend Steven Weisberg at the Townsend afterwards. And enjoy a conversation with him. All right, great things going on. I'm starting to feel better. I still have a bit of a cold. It's nasty, but hey, let's talk to Tommy Siegel from Nark Twain, whose new album is out now. It's an EP, and they're from Brooklyn, New York. You can find them on SoundCloud. You can find them on Twitter. And get out there and get involved with Narc Twain. After that, we'll be talking to Sam Means, okay? So, big show. Skype conversations. Let's do it. Here's my friend Tommy Siegel from Narc Twain. Let's get down. Hey, all right.
How's it going, man?
And you're talking on the... Oh, hang on, my dad's calling me. That's so weird. How's it going, Tommy?
It's going really well. How about yourself?
It's going very, very well. How's Brooklyn today?
It's a brisk fall day.
Oh, yeah?
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Austin.
Oh, nice. So it's probably very nice there.
No, it's a brisk cold day. It's kind of humid and gross.
Oh, wow. Define cold.
Like 48.
Hey, that is cold.
That's cold. I mean, look, we got up to like 50 something today. I'm saying the low.
Yeah.
I'm giving you the good news. Hey, congratulations on your EP.
Thank you.
And also, by the way, Narc Twain is easily one of the best names I've ever heard. I actually said it to my neighbor when he asked me what I was doing. I was like, I'm about to do a podcast with this guy from this band called Narc Twain. And he just started laughing and went in his apartment. And I was like, yeah, it's a fucking great name. How did you, how was that not taken?
Yeah, I was surprised it wasn't taken either.
Yeah.
But it wasn't taken at all. Like, literally, you Google it, and there was like one guy who has it as his Instagram handle, and that's like it.
Oh. Do you have an Instagram?
A band Instagram?
Yeah.
We don't have one for the band.
Okay.
Yeah, because he took it.
Well, I was wondering what you would call it, Narc Twain 2.
Yeah, Narc Twain 2.
Or 2 ends. Anyway, the songs that I heard from your EP are great. How many songs are actually on it?
6.
Okay, great. And you did it there in Brooklyn?
Yes, we did. We self-recorded and self-mixed and everything.
So talk about it. I heard that you read this book of poetry called The Cult of Comfort by Jeremy Shaw, and that kind of tipped you off this surrealist poetry.
Yeah, so in my old apartment building, I think there must have been somebody who lived above me who was like maybe ran some kind of poetry journal, or maybe was a poet herself, or I don't really know. But for whatever reason, she was always putting really nice poetry books in the recycling bin.
Uh-huh.
And this one, I don't know why she didn't like it, because it's honestly my favorite. It's my favorite poetry book I've ever read. But it caught my eye. It's this book, The Cult of Comfort. By Jeremy Schmall. He's a formerly New York-based poet, but now he lives in Detroit.
Okay.
But I just became totally enamored with this guy's writing, and it kind of spawned a whole set of songs based off random lines from the book. So I'd kind of like, you know, read a poem and then use that as a springboard to write my own stuff. So there's little references to it sprinkled throughout the record, but nothing totally overt. There's some, it's just like little lines here and there that are kind of like nods to his book. But the fun part even later was that, one of his poems has his email address in it. Or it had a email address in it, and I thought it might be his. So I emailed him and was like, hey, like, I know this is going to sound weird. I found your book in the recycling bin, and I made this whole record. It's kind of spawned from this book. Like, here it is. I hope you like it. And it's been a really nice correspondence. I mean, hopefully the plan is to actually do something that's a deliberate collaboration at some point, since he was an unwitting collaborator for this most recent release.
So did he hear it?
Yeah, he liked it.
Yeah, awesome, yeah, man. What a great thing to have happen. Where do you come from? Where are you from?
I'm from Virginia.
Okay. Yeah. Did you start playing music there?
Yeah, you know, I had a high school band, and then went to college, and then eventually moved to New York. And
what did you go to college for?
Journalism.
Okay. Did you continue that?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Just
music.
Okay. So did you have bands in college?
Yeah. So I also play in a kind of a piano pop band called Jukebox the Ghost that has been a band for, 12 years now.
Okay, so you still play with that band?
Yeah, we're still going, still touring working on our fifth record.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, so Narc Twain is comparatively a baby band.
Compared, because this is your debut EP.
This is our debut EP.
So tell me about Jukebox the Ghost.
Yeah. Well, let's see. It's kind of a piano pop band.
What is piano pop? What you mean, like Elton John?
Yeah, maybe in that camp. You know, it's really more just to signify that it's pop rock music that's where piano plays a very prominent role.
Okay, what do you play? Guitar?
I play guitar and bass and sing. Okay, and the band has two lead singers, so we kind of switch off.
Awesome. I'm sorry to go back and listen to that. I thought it was like an old band or something. The way that
it's still going. It's very different than Narc Twain, so it would probably feel a little out of left field if your introduction was through Narc Twain.
Right.
It's just another side of my music that I love.
So what did you grow up like listening to? What influences? Because it seems like there's math rock. I've read some math rock references in it, and there does feel like there's a Pavement feel to some of the stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, great. Love it.
Did you grow up on that stuff? Or
definitely. I'm trying to think that my first kind of experience with the kind of world that Narc Twain operates in was seeing, when I was like 13, was seeing Fugazi.
Okay.
Live, and it totally exploded my head. But I almost didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
And wasn't really a punk kid growing up, and that it's almost become a later in life thing that I've been like, oh man, punk.
Yeah.
So I think I have the opposite experience of a lot of people. It's not coming from a place of teenage angst. It's coming from I don't know where.
Well, you get a different level of it. You're probably not into as much of the just bang your head punk, and probably more. There was a lot of I know that you're in a band, Drunken Sufis. Is
yes.
that right? And yeah. And that's like an art punk band.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that always dealt on a little more of an intelligent level than like the Sex Pistols versus Television, if that's a punk band. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. No, it's true. I've never been I've never been particularly into the kind of like oi 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 punk kind of mosh pit sort of thing.
Yeah.
I definitely lean more brainy.
Yeah.
But I love angular aggressive guitar music. And I'm particularly kind of enamored by bands that use guitars and are heavy but don't use a lot of distortion.
Okay.
On their amps or their pedals. I think it kind of gives it this, like Television, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I mean, Fugazi's not a bad example either. A lot of their songs are really dry and not particularly distorted or grungy, but they carry a lot of weight.
Are they a DC band?
Yes.
Were you in like
yes.
the part of Virginia where you could access DC easily?
I wasn't. I'm from Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
The DC. I went to college in DC, and that definitely impacted my musical life a lot.
Yeah.
Getting into Dismemberment Plan and Q and Not You and Lungfish and Black Eyes and all these bands that were around at that time totally changed my brain
in a good
way.
Well, for the Narc Twain stuff, did you come up with those songs kind of on your own and then brought them to the band to kind of work them out, or did you?
It was kind of a mix of
Okay.
Some of them were I'd really demoed out completely, and then we sort of just arranged similar versions in the practice room, and then some of them really were just like I would come in with like one line and one chord progression, and then we would jam and figure it out from there.
Well, that's great.
Yeah,
that's good. And so the other guys, John Thayer, he's also the producer.
Yeah, so he's a drummer, and he's also just a killer engineer. So he engineered and mixed the whole record.
Yeah.
As well.
There's a great sense of humor about that. Do your other bands have that kind of sense of humor in their music?
Yeah,
you have that?
Especially Drunken Sufis okay. has definitely kind of like a clown. Like, it almost feels like we're trolling people. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, we are when we have shows now, it's very, the music's very heavy and it's kind of confrontational, but it's funny. Okay. I think, and sort of alienating. So I think no matter how hard we try, this one group of people, we just get, whether it's Narc Twain or Drunken Sufis, we can't seem to make music that's actually threatening in a real way.
Right.
No matter how heavy we would get, there's like that little like waka 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 moment, you know? So, and you know, that definitely goes for Narc Twain. There's always like, there's a one liner in like every song that just kind of, that, you know, if you hear a particularly dark line and there's kind of a one liner that makes you go like, oh, these guys don't.
Right. Yeah.
They're not like preaching or anything.
Yeah.
And I like that. That attitude resonates with me. I don't really like, I don't like feeling like I'm lecturing people with my own anxiety.
Right. Is that what a lot of your songs are based on?
Or I think so. I mean, I don't know. Don't you think that there's like this weird element of being an aware person in the 21st century where you're kind of constantly disgusted by your own comforts?
Yeah.
And where they come from.
That's what I thought. That Cult of Comfort title was so particular to now, and just literally like you don't even go poop without taking this form of entertainment with you, you know, checking your Tinder or whatever while you're crapping. Yeah. When you could just be like letting your, I think about that because I think about times where like I realize like I listen to stuff when I go exercise, I listen to stuff when I'm driving, I listen to stuff when I go to the grocery store, and then I'll be in the shower and be like, I'm not engaging. Or not even engaging, I shouldn't even say that. I'm not pacifying the voices with some sort of, you know, with some sort of thing coming in.
Yeah.
Those things that make us comfortable in a scary way.
We're all hooked on these instant gratifications, whether it's social media or, I mean, even just the basis of the American lifestyle, which none of us are willing to give up. You know, I'm not willing to give up the fact that I can go to a grocery store and buy an avocado any time of the year. But the fact that I can do that, there's all sorts of terrible things that have to happen in order for me to buy an avocado in January. You know, it's not a natural time to buy an avocado.
Right.
That's an avocado that wasted a lot of gasoline to get to my mouth. So there's just all sorts of little things like that, that I think for me, the only way I can make amends with kind of that 21st century anxiety of like, what the hell are we doing? Like, is this going to, are we destroying humanity? Are we destroying our planet just by being comfortable? The only way I can figure out how to reckon with that is just by writing songs. I don't really know what else to do with it other than in those little ways where you try to convince yourself you're helping. You're like, oh, I'm recycling. That's good.
Well, you know, you do what you can.
Yeah.
Not to change gears in a weird way, but in this, are you like an active member of this Brooklyn music scene?
That's a good question. I mean, it's almost like it's such a big scene that I think no one actually feels active in it, even if they are.
Okay.
So I certainly have a lot of friends in bands, and we certainly play in Brooklyn a lot. But it's such a massive scene that I don't know if I'm ever going to feel like, oh, yeah, I'm like really, I'm a part of this scene. People
right.
know who I am or anything like that. It definitely doesn't, I don't think it feels like that ever. So, but someone from the outside might be like, oh, yeah, they're part of the Brooklyn scene. But
well, you just get that because you know bands means, from Brooklyn, you immediately think they're all having beers, you know, together. It's like TV on the radio and you will know us by the Trail of Dead. And what's this one band that I really love? Santigold, aren't they from?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a show, you're doing a release show at the Knitting Factory this Thursday. This won't be out by then, but are you guys planning on doing more shows, taking it on the road?
We're hoping to take it on the road at some point. That'll probably have to wait till the spring. This EP is kind of our way of playing some shows, getting our baby band out into the world and announcing our existence.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, we're definitely going to make more records, and there's undoubtedly more to come from the band, and hopefully a tour in the near future.
Good. Do you tour with Jukebox the Ghost a lot?
We do. We tour. We used to tour a lot more, but now we kind of, I mean, we tour probably at least a third of the year.
Oh wow.
So that's how we you know, eat food and
yeah.
And have places to sleep and all that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's good. It looks like you have a nice place to sleep. I was imagining in Brooklyn you would be calling me from what I would consider a closet.
Oh, I just broke into somebody's apartment.
Do you have a recording situation there? Is that where you're calling me from?
I do. I do. I have a home recording studio that I use for, not for Narc Twain really, but for other projects that involve more bedroomy kind of acoustic recordings.
Right.
I work from home.
Do you do some solo stuff like that? Is there some Tommy Siegel jams out there?
Not really. I there probably will be at some point. For now, things kind of fall into either Jukebox the Ghost if they're pop,
right.
or Narc Twain if they're more aggressive and guitar driven, and then Drunken Sufis if they're completely atonal and don't make any sense.
Right. How does that work? How do you guys make music in Drunken Sufis? It's not like an actual traditional songwriting.
No. Well, it's been different every record. We've kind of kept reinventing ourselves. The last record we did was an alphabet record. So every song was, we kind of come in with a mindset. And so for that record, it was an alphabet record. So we're going to have a song for each letter of the alphabet.
Okay.
And every song was going to be under a minute.
Okay.
So once you have that as your, and it's instrumental. So once we had that as our kind of construct to make the record, then I started, me and the other guitarist started writing riffs together. And we tracked it in a totally backwards way where we just tracked the electric guitars first, not to a click, and then had everybody else play over top of them without telling them
what was going to happen,
how the riff went, what, you know, what notes were in it, what time signature was in, anything like that. And everyone only got three takes. So at the end, we ended up making the record deliberately out of everyone's flubs. So it's sort of like this whole, it's like an ode to flubbing.
That sounds good. What's it called?
The that alphabet album's record? Called, that album's called Cotton Candy Cluster Bombs.
Okay. Cotton Candy Cluster Bombs by Drunken Sufis.
Indeed.
Did you ever practice Sufism?
No, anyway. I'm not a practicing Sufi. I'm sad to say. I wish.
I don't think many people are around like that we would know in music. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure I'd be much happier.
Do you guys have any plans to try and come down for South by Southwest?
You know, I don't think we do. I think Jukebox is actually touring around that time.
Okay.
So we will not be, but hope to get there at some point.
Did you play CMJ?
Yeah, Narc Twain did. We did a few CMJ showcases. That was a lot of fun.
How was that?
It was great. I mean, CMJ is so weird, though. Have you been?
No, no. But so, it's not like South by Southwest, right?
Or well, it is.
Okay,
it is. It's kind of it's like South by Southwest without the pull of being in an awesome city. Like, I mean, New York is awesome.
It's awesome, but it's difficult
it's
to get around.
It's difficult
yeah.
place to be a band. So it's sort of, I mean, it's exactly like South by. It's like every show has like 10 bands. Everybody plays a 25-minute set.
Yeah.
There's no sound check, so everybody sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And you don't get paid.
Right.
So it's really just like South by Southwest.
Yeah.
But so the only reason to play it is if you're a young or new band trying to let people know that you exist. Because it is a good place. For that, you definitely get the sense that people are experiencing CMJ hoping to see new music that they like. And,
right.
you know, that's not the case for other music festivals.
When you went into it, did you have like some things that you like, we want a manager, we want a booking guy, we want to get it this in front of these press people, we want to get in front of these buyers or whatever?
Not really. I mean, I've sort of found if you have any expectations from the music industry.
Right.
You're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And it's best to just be excited about whatever does
yeah.
happen. And so for Narc Twain, we're totally starting from scratch. We do have a manager. But otherwise it's kind of, you know, it's unlike Jukebox the Ghost. It's still very DIY. So you can't see it, but I spent today trying to make t-shirts in my living room and failing. But I'm working on it.
How are you doing? You got a screen printer and everything?
No, that's the problem. I just have fabric spray paint, and I made my own stencils. Yeah.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of these is going to turn out.
For the show on Thursday?
Yeah.
How is that? I've never been to the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn. There used to be one in the city, though, right? Because I think I played that one.
Yeah. It's in Tribeca.
Okay.
No, well, the old one was in Tribeca. And yeah, I've played.
And it was three stories, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the new one's just a one-room club. I mean, they have a front bar, and then they have the music venue. What kind of band were you in? What was your band?
Who did I play with then? I was playing with a guy named Ian Moore.
It's cool.
A guy from Seattle, and he had put out a record. He used to be like a guitar hero in the 90s, and then he was putting out like a power pop record.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. Yeah,
and what were you playing?
I was playing guitar and some keyboards and singing backup, and like doing awesome shit like playing Omnichord,
yeah,
things like that. Yeah, those are fun to play. Easy.
Yeah.
So, anything else that we need to know? The record comes out this week, and people can find you guys on Facebook. There's not an actual website, right?
No, we're working on that. But you know, it's a funny the funny thing about 2015 is like if you make a website, it just redirects you to social media.
Yeah, that's what I notice in research for these bands, that's usually what I use people's websites for. That and a bio.
Yeah. So I have very little inspiration to like go out by the URL because it's like, well, if they want to find it, they'll find it.
Well, they can look up Narc Twain and find you on SoundCloud, Twitter, Facebook, and wherever you need to be found. You're on Bandcamp, right?
In Bandcamp as well, yeah. So the record's going to be out December 3rd, or if you're listening in the future, I guess it will have been out on December 3rd.
On December 3rd, which Thursday.
We're really excited to get it out into the world.
Well, congratulations, man. You guys did a good job. It was nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. Cheers. Say it again, say it again, say it again to yourself that it's all down here. It's all down. All right. Narc Twain, man. Tommy Siegel, I'd like to thank him for doing the show. That was a nice Skype conversation. Check it out. Check out their debut album. It is out now. You can find them on SoundCloud, on Twitter. Just look up Narc Twain. Hard not to find them. All right. Great name. Narc Twain. Check out also Jukebox the Ghost and Drunken Sufis. Those are Tommy's other bands. All right. So now on to the second conversation of the show. We talked to Phoenix artist Sam Means, who was originally from the band The Format, which was his band with Nate Roos, who's the frontman from the band Fun. Well, he's putting out a new solo album that comes out January 22nd, 2016, produced by the great Stephen McDonald from one of my favorite bands, Red Cross. You can hear some samples of this band, samples of the album, sorry, at sammeansmusic.com. You can find him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Spotify, SoundCloud. We have a great Skype conversation. He is also the owner of HelloMerch.com, which is a merchandise company for bands. If you're in a band, check it out. Sam and I have a great conversation about music, about performing. He hasn't really performed as a solo artist, and he's trying to figure all of that out. And we have a great conversation about it. There's one thing about it. His microphone on his headphones was rubbing on his shirt a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, but it stops after a while when I notice it, what it was. So anyway, enjoy my conversation with a very talented and very cool Sam Means.
Till the river is empty.
never tells you how still life can. Hello?
Hello.
Sam.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Can you see me?
I can see you.
I cannot see you for some reason.
Let me see. Hold on here.
Okay. Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right.
Cool.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So what I've heard of your album is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And you're in Phoenix?
I am, yeah.
How's that?
It's actually pretty awesome right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, the weather just started cooling off about maybe 3-4 weeks ago. So it's in the 60s in the daytime and gets down in about the 40s at night. So it's beautiful.
Yeah. So this solo album was a long time in the making. Am I
it
right?
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
How long? 10 years in the sort of planning or no?
No, it's been about, I guess, coming up on 8 years.
Okay. Well, that's a long time.
7 years. Yeah, it's still a long time.
Were the songs culminated over that whole time, or were they newer songs that you,
a couple of them were right away about 8 years ago. Okay. And then I had written a bunch of stuff happened in between, and I just ended up not really using the songs for the album. So I put out a couple of EPs and singles and did some film soundtracks and things like that. So some of those songs over the 8 years just ended up in other places. So when last year I decided I was just going to start totally fresh.
Right.
And, so most of the songs that ended up on the album were new except for two of them.
Okay. Tell me about the soundtrack. Like that, what I heard of it, I listened to like most of it today. It's really great, and that song "Yeah Yeah" is fantastic, and it ended up doing really well for you, huh?
Yeah, that was a crazy thing. The soundtrack, it was the first thing that I did after the format broke up.
Right.
The format had done a song for this guy McLean. And I guess he hadn't heard the news that the format broke up. So he called and he was like, hey, would you guys be interested in doing a soundtrack? And I was like, well, no, we actually just broke up. Nate started another band. So it was really just me. And he's like, well, would you want to do it? So I ended up doing it. It was a kind of a crazy thing because they actually had the entire film scored already. And there was some kind of disagreement with the person who had done it. And he backed out. And so they were like, we spent all of our budget. It's gone. So you would just totally be doing this for free, but you can keep the rights to everything, which ended up working out really great in my favor because that one of the songs, Yeah Yeah, did do really well.
Yeah.
So I spent some time on it, got some friends. That was really the first thing that I'd ever done even, on my own. I just sort of did it in my guest house on a laptop and that's how it turned out.
It's amazing. And you did the most recent album, 10 songs with Stephen McDonald.
I did,
from
yeah.
Red Cross, wow.
Yes.
Are you like a big Red Cross guy?
I actually had never even heard Red Cross. The format worked with him. He did our last album, Dog Problems.
Okay. And oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah, so I had never, I knew him from then, and that was actually the first time that I ever heard Red Cross. I had heard of them, but I just never listened to them. So since then, yeah, now I'm a huge Red Cross. I love their first album. It's so great.
You're from Phoenix. Were you like part of, was there like a punk scene there that you were part of? Like, explain how you came up in music.
Yeah. I started getting into like pop punk music and, you know, the typical stuff like Operation Ivy and, the Descendants are like one of my favorite bands of all time. So I started getting into those bands and, friends of mine, we would just get together in my car. I was the first one who could drive.
Right.
So we just would go to Tempe and Mesa and just start going to see these shows. And that's how we discovered all these bands. You know, it just grows super organically. Like you go to see one band and then the first three bands that open, you discover are just totally amazing. So you go buy their stuff and then you go to their shows when they come back. So we were really, really we just went to tons of shows. And then a couple of us ended up working at the punk club called The Nile.
Oh, okay.
And that's how we really got into it and started getting into it. Right around that time, we were getting into being in bands and stuff too. So it all really worked out. It was fun.
So it also seems like there's a healthy dose of pop. And you even work with Roger Manning.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the 90s pop gurus.
Yeah, and I was super into 90s pop music, too. So
like Jellyfish and stuff?
Yeah, I love Jellyfish, That Dog, Anna Warnaker, She's married to Steve. So that was just an amazing bonus. She did some stuff on Dog Problems as well too. So, Jellyfish, all those bands, you know, Weezer obviously was like a huge band for me when I was growing up.
Right. And so how did you guys end up starting the format? Like, how did that come about?
Nate and I had been in two bands. We were the first band, you know, when I was about 17 or so. I was just a horrible pop punk band called Never Gonna Score. And I don't know who came up with that name, but it stuck. And then that band ended up breaking up, and we started getting a little bit more serious about the music. And we're like, we can't just keep, you know, we're getting into this other music, and we don't want to just keep writing these silly songs. So we started a second band called This Past Year, which was just like a little bit more mature, kind of like we started getting into the Get Up Kids and Jimmy Eat World and like that. So we were trying to emulate that stuff. And that band didn't last very long at all. It was we recorded, I think, 5 songs. And by the time that was done, it was, you know, we didn't know what to do. So
at that time, what was your role in those bands?
Those bands, I was just the guitar player. Okay. I was barely writing. This Past Year that's when Nate and I really started kind of branching off a little bit from the other guys. And we'd go drive around in his car, or like go sit in the park and just, you know, start writing songs. We were listening to a lot of Third Eye Blind too. So we started getting into this more into like the craft of songwriting, and even more so into the production that we started getting like really into producers and, you know, drum sounds and just geeking out on liner notes and stuff like that. So, that band broke up, and I think there was even like a little bit of a falling out with everybody towards the end. And I had this song that apparently Nate had burned on a CD somewhere in his car. And over a month or two, whatever it was, we weren't really talking. Over a month or two, I guess he had been writing lyrics and a melody to it.
Oh, wow.
And they just called me out of the blue, and he's like, hey, that song, I've had it in my car. I think it's great. I think we should try to record it. And I had actually already booked some studio time with this guy. So I'm like, oh, well, I have studio time already. Like, just come down and we'll record whatever you got.
Right.
And that's exactly how the format started. He just came in and we're like, oh, I guess this is pretty cool. This is a thing. We should just keep doing it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then, so that went on for a few years. Were you guys signed? Is that how you ended up working with Steve?
Yeah, we got signed really quick. I think we had only played, we recorded in that session, we did 5 songs and we put out an EP ourselves, and we were just, you know, walking into record stores and seeing if they'd take it. And we started getting some hype, I guess, from the first couple shows that we did. The bands that we were in before, even though they were kind of cheesy, they were kind of popular on a local level. So when we started, you know, talking about the format being a band, there was just a little bit of buzz from the get-go. And then just some things happened. It ended up being re-released really quick. We sold out of the first 1,000 fast, and Jim Atkins from Jimmy Eat World had just started a record label, and he asked if he could re-release it under his label. So that was a cool thing. We got a little bit of press, and then really within like a few months, we were just getting offers from labels, and certainly within like 6 months, we were signed to Elektra Records.
Wow. And oh, what years was that?
I think we got signed in 2002.
Oh, okay.
And, we put the record out in 2003, right. and then they folded.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like months after the album came out.
Yeah.
And we didn't get dropped. We got moved to Atlantic Records.
Right.
And we were in this really strange limbo for a long time. And we just toured. We didn't know what else to do. Well, so we just started touring.
How does that happen? I was caught up in that. I was signed to a subsidiary of Elektra, but I left in 2001.
Yeah.
And how does that work in that time when you're kind of in limbo? How does that work for you creatively?
It actually was okay. It ended up being okay for us because we were so busy touring. We got a really good booking agent, and we didn't even really think about it. I guess right away when that album came out, we knew that something weird was happening. People started getting fired.
Right.
And we weren't, the communication was
gone. You can't get a hold of anyone anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we put the record out in October in the fourth quarter. And right. so that was a bad thing from the start. And so it was sort of like, well, the album's out, but now we're going to have to wait till next year to really do anything.
Right.
And then we just, like, never heard from them again. So, so we chose to just, we were just like, okay, well, touring's going really well. We're, you know, we are, it seems to be growing. We're getting a lot of good support tours. So we just kept going, really.
Yes.
And by the time it was time to, you know, start talking about doing a second album, we had a couple of new A&R people who were really great at Atlantic, and they tried. But it was just a weird time for everybody, you know. So ultimately we got dropped from Atlantic.
I don't know if people like that are listening that say haven't been in that part of the game. If you're not in it directly, you don't realize just how easy it is to just fall through the cracks.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? For something to happen for like what happened for fun, that is like literally one in a million.
Yeah, and we knew that too, but you still, you know, like growing up in kind of the punk scene, and not like I was some crusty punk or anything, but I knew that I had that
DIY.
The DIY thing going in. I knew like major labels are evil. This is not going to end up well, but maybe it will this time. You know, kind of like, I think there's like a funny quote from Arrested Development where it's sort of like, this doesn't ever work, but it just might work for us.
Yeah.
That was the thing we were going in. So we were, a term that we were throwing around often was cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
Because we had hopes, you know, we knew we had a good record, and everybody, obviously, when you're getting signed, it's like, everyone's so excited at the label. Like they just love you so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's a point where everything shifts and you start to realize like, I don't think they like us as much as they were leading on in the beginning.
Yeah.
So, we were really cautious, and I think we played it really smart. You know, we just did, we actually did feel a little bit guilty by getting signed so fast, because we knew you have to go out there, you have to tour, you have to develop as band, you know, as a band and as musicians. And so getting signed so quick, despite the fact that we had been in two bands together and we had sort of been developing on that level, we knew that there was more. You know, we hadn't really gone out on a national level and done too much.
And you learned through all that, all those, going to those punk shows even from the beginning, that you have to be the first and second band on those bills.
Oh, absolutely.
For a while, for people to know who you are.
We went on any tour anyone would give us.
Yeah.
We did anything. And a lot of them, most of them ended up being really well for us, despite, you know, it didn't really matter who the band was. It could have been anybody. And it just seemed like we were lucky enough to get on bills with bands who had fans that just cared about music in general, not just some specific genre, you know?
Right. So, so after the format broke up and then you did that, you did that soundtrack. Did you form your own band and go out and play and do some?
No, I've actually never played as a solo musician. It's kind of crazy. It's one of those things now where I feel like I missed the boat. Like I've gone too far. Like now I'm 35. I've been in a touring band, and the idea of starting now seems like
sucks.
It could be potentially disastrous. It's like I've sang live, you know, like as a lead singer once, one song on a benefit show that I was really seriously forced into. It's kind of a tough situation, because I know, you know, it's like most people who are singing started when they were 15 or 16 and played those shows in the basements and the living rooms and like developed this. Playing live or singing live is definitely its own thing. You know, you really have to craft it and hone in on that. And I never needed to do that because I always had Nate. So for me, now I'm just a little worried about it. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I'll ever get out there.
But you had the greatest look on your face when you said that.
Yeah. It's something that comes up often. I mean, I've been turning down a lot of people, like, and they're just like, what do you mean you don't play live? It's like, I just haven't done it. I don't know. It hasn't really.
I mean, don't you get with guys and just go in a room and just try and bang out the songs and see what happens?
Yeah. I mean, I've been throwing around the idea. The thing that is, I mean, it's good because I love the guys, but it's bad because everybody now, all the people that are involved in this record and have been involved in all the stuff that I've done prior to this, including, they were all came from the format too.
Okay.
Everyone lives in a different state. Yeah, I heard that. Okay. Like everyone, like one guy's in Washington, one guy's in Philadelphia, one guy's in Boston. And everyone has jobs and kids and all that stuff. So, you know, it's like, hey, can I get you guys to come out for 2 months and rehearse just to make sure this is cool? You know, that concept isn't necessarily very likely. So I have to figure something out. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I mean, the idea of playing is great. I mean, I loved playing live with the format. We toured relentlessly for years, so I do miss it.
Yeah.
But it's a whole new world for me, really.
So, you have another source of income, which is Hello Merch, right?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. And does that keep you busy as well?
Yeah, that was the other thing that I started really right away. The format had a very small merch operation for a couple years, and we were just handling our own merchandise and selling it. And my friend was, we had a little warehouse, and my friend was shipping it all out for us when we were gone, and then we'd come down and help when we were off tour and stuff like that. So we'd always wanted to expand it, because being in a band and finding a reputable merch company is a pretty difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
But we just didn't feel like we had enough time to devote to that. So I'm a busybody. Like, I really need something to do during the day. I need emails to answer. Like, I called myself like the day-to-day manager in the format. I was the guy, you know, that was talking to all the people and dealing with stuff. So that first, you know, after that first week when my email box was empty, I was just sitting on the couch going like, I got to do something. So I started that just right away. Went down, filed the paperwork with the state, got a little warehouse, got it going, had a few bands for, you know, a year. And then it just grew into what it is today. It was almost all word of mouth.
Yeah, you have a lot of bands on there.
Yeah, we work with a bunch, and almost all of them can be tied back to the first one. It's a really cool thing.
Wow. Wow. And so is Hello Records, is that your own label that you started through that?
Yeah, that's something I'm toying with expanding also. I'm seeing if I, you know, we have a lot of good people that work here on the merch side,
right,
who are perfectly capable of running a label also.
Right.
So I decided, you know, it's probably I knew I wanted to self-release it. So I just said, I'm going to start Hello Records, see if I can build up a little bit of a thing, and then, you know, maybe put a few more things out and see how it goes.
Yeah. How, do you have any bands? Like, do you go see bands a lot?
Not as much as I used to.
Right. Do you have kids or anything? You married?
I'm married. I have one kid. Yeah. Okay. She's six.
Okay.
Yeah. They're great.
Yeah. That slows it down though, a little bit, the going out and.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they go to bed early. They pass out. So I'm able to get out every once in a while.
Yeah.
They're really cool about that. You know, I'm a night owl, so everyone's used to me kind of doing something after everyone goes to sleep. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is a little hard. I mean, it was good to take a break for a while. I had been to even before the format started, I worked at a venue. And then I own a concert promotion company with a couple of friends, and we were doing about 45 shows a month at that point. So I've just seen so much live music.
Yeah.
I had to take a little bit of a break from it for a while.
How, since you're not quite playing live yet, can I ask you a quick favor?
Yeah.
Can you lift that microphone off your shirt? I think I just found a weird, that's totally so much better.
Is that better?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
There was a weird sound happening. I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I was like, wait a minute. Okay. How are you planning on, outside of I've noticed you've gotten some publicity. You have a publicist working with you. How do you plan on getting the word out about the record?
Really just, I don't know. Yeah.
I appreciate that though.
Yeah. I mean, my theory going into this is just, I mean, I do know that in a lot of cases, especially if you're attempting to start, you know, like a full blown career in music, you do have to get out and tour. It's not that it's not important. But for me, really, I'm just hoping that Yeah, I have an awesome publicist who's gotten some stuff. You know, the internet's a pretty powerful tool.
Yeah.
I also have gotten quite a bit of television licensing over the years.
Yeah, and I saw that. It was licensed. Like, I don't know if I even wrote it down, but it was over 2 dozen times. Over 2 dozen commercials all over the world. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. That song has gone all over the place. So I don't think that anything will happen like that again. That was kind of a fluke for that to happen.
I didn't know if, like, maybe once you did have a success like that, then maybe you had a shoe into that side of the industry, which is like songwriters and people in bands are all like, you know, I'm just trying to get some songs on the show. Like, that's
yeah. I just work with some really cool people that have been able to get my music out there, even when I wasn't really trying. I mean, that the first commercial that I got was totally a fluke. The same publicist that I have now when I did the soundtrack, Sue, who's amazing. I just was like, hey, can you just throw out a press release or something just so somebody knows I did something?
Yeah.
And so I think Spin picked it up and there was one article that happened. And from there it went off to just, you know, maybe like a couple blogs or something. And then after like a year, this girl heard it and she was just like, hey, I just pitched this song for a commercial. I know you don't know me and I know it's kind of weird, but are you cool with that? Like, are you down to do that? And I was like, yeah. And so that was, you know, I didn't even think it was real at first because so much time had passed and just like, how did you even find this? This is crazy.
Yeah.
And then she did it a couple more times and then she was like, we should probably just start working together. This is like a good thing.
Yeah.
That was like 4 or 5 years ago. And just still to this day, I mean, things come up for that song all the time.
And it's the same song.
It's the same song. Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's just one of those songs. It's like, I think it just sits perfectly under talking about cereal or whatever.
What's the most absurd product that it's sold so far that you've been like, what? Seriously? Do you even see everything that it's in? Because there's a lot of European stuff.
I think I've managed to see most of it. I mean, it's been like, you know, a couple cell phone companies, a cereal commercial in Australia. It was even licensed for like the Mormon religion, like some
really
like campaign they were doing. That was through a different thing. It was through one of the guys I think that had worked on the movie or something. But yeah, it's found its place and like a department store in Spain. That was probably the weirdest one, I guess, because I didn't even understand what it was. It's just like, I don't even know what's happening in this commercial, what they're even advertising.
Wow. Well, it's great, man. A lot of people wish they could have that sort of that song, you know?
Yeah, I really, really, really lucked out with that. Because, I mean, the format we had tried, you know, to get that stuff. And
do you submit like other songs for stuff all the time? And you're like, what? How is this shit not getting into this one song? Gets into everything. What did I do?
I don't. I mean, I just, anytime I do new music, I just send them that. You know, I haven't really done anything specifically for a commercial. I'll just be like, hey, here's a few more songs. Throw them in your arsenal and maybe something will happen.
Can I ask you a question about the artwork in the back?
Yeah.
Is it all done by one artist?
Yes.
Is it you?
No, it's this guy, Steve Keen.
Okay. He's a big
He's a New York street painter.
Oh, okay.
He actually painted the cover for Wowie Zowie by Pavement, which is one of my favorite records.
Oh, yeah.
But what he does is he'll set up like 30 pieces of wood, and it's just a big wall of wood, and he'll paint the exact same thing 30 times.
Okay.
In one sitting. And then, these bigger ones, I have a bunch of small ones too.
Yeah.
The small ones, you can go to his website and you just say like, give me 8 of them. And you don't know what you're getting. You'll just get like, you get a president and like Central Park or whatever, you know, it's just random stuff. These ones I actually got on eBay. They're all the Beatles albums. I think he's done all of them.
Yeah.
He's cool.
Yeah. Are you a big Beatles fan?
Yes.
Obviously.
Massive Beatles fan.
What else is there? What is there anything else that you're listening to now that you're like, oh yeah, that's good. Or inspiring or in some way?
Yeah, I'm really getting into, I love the new That Dog song. They just put a song out for Lena Dunham's podcast with Andrew Dost, who was in Fun with Nate.
All right.
It's really super good. And then I've been listening to...
Is Fun Not Together anymore?
No, they're on a hiatus, and Nate just put out a solo record this year.
Are you guys still friends?
Yeah, very much so.
He's an amazing fucking singer, man.
Oh yeah, he's the best.
Yeah,
he's so good.
The other guy from the band too is really good.
Yeah, Jack.
Jack. Yeah,
he has bleachers, and that's going really well too, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's doing really good, and Andrew's doing good. I just talked to him the other day. It seems like he's got a lot of stuff going on.
So. You made a great video.
Thanks.
You did, for We're Alone.
Thank you.
And so that's a good way to get it out. It ended up getting picked up by Nerdist. I saw that.
Yeah, that was really cool. I thought that was kind of the perfect place for it.
Yeah.
I didn't know where that would land. I'm like, if anywhere, I mean, weird video with aliens in it should be a good spot.
Well, I don't think it's so off base to not go out and traditionally play and promote an album like you did before, or like one would have done always before, because things have changed so much that it is almost time to sort of reinvent how you spread the word about your record without killing yourself. You know what I mean? There's got to be a way to do it without a 35-year-old dude with his own company and a 6-year-old kid like sleeping in someone's floor in Shreveport.
Yeah, which I would like to do, but that really is the other part of it. It's like logistically, it is very difficult, despite the fact, you know, despite the fear of just having never really done it. There is that side of it too, where it's hard. I mean, I'm at work right now. I was just out packing orders for Black Friday.
Like,
hey guys, got to take a break and go do an interview real quick. So I am juggling a lot of things, but it's good. I mean, I love that. I love just being busy, but adding one more thing to the plate right now, you know, going on tour might be a little difficult, but
yeah. And for bands listening that may not have a merch thing, I know that, like, for my own particular music, I've gone to some guys around that have a thing in their garage and they end up making some shirts and maybe some companies here in town, but your company offers any kind of merchandise, even mugs?
Yeah. I mean, stuff we do, we only do screen printing in house, but I mean, now at this point we've made so many strange things for bands, we can do anything. We just, you know, sub it out. We have people that we have these, you know, just good partners for anything.
And people, people can find you at hellomerch.com.
Hellomerch.com.
Yeah. And as far as like pre-release buying for the album, because your album 10 Songs doesn't come out until January 22nd.
Correct.
In the new year, people can go there and there's all kinds of like packages they can order with like a t-shirt and like.
Yeah, I made up some fun stuff. Yeah, we have. You have a deluxe package with shirts and a frisbee and a notebook and some lapel pins.
Yeah.
All the fun stuff that I just really like. I like little notebooks, like field notes, and I don't know. I don't know why I just started collecting lapel pins. So I wanted to make some. But yeah, that's the physical pre-orders up now. There's some cool stuff there. And then it's going to be on iTunes for pre-order, I think, in a couple weeks. So that'll be good for the people that don't want to shell out the money for the physical copies.
Right. And people can go hear tunes on SoundCloud. You got a few songs up there.
Yeah.
And also on Spotify, you can hear the whole The Sinking of the Santa Isabel motion picture soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's up there. Yeah. All my stuff's up there.
Yeah. Is there anything I'm missing?
No, I don't think so.
No. Thanks for talking to me.
I
love your tunes, man. You're a great songwriter, and let me know if you ever do get the urge to jump up on stage and play. I'd like to see that.
I will. Where are you? Where are you living?
I'm in Austin.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah,
my friend used to live out there.
Who's that? Maybe we know.
Nate Burry. He wasn't there for very long. Oh. He worked for Apple for a little bit.
Oh, okay. There. I have a lot of friends over there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's a big big computer town. Well, everyone should get out there to sammeans.com. They can find you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Spotify, SoundCloud. And your album, 10 Songs, will be out in January.
January 22nd.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for being on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Bye. Take me down to the river. We're alone when the lights come. Come on, take me down to the river. We're alone when the light
let's come. All right. Sam Means, man. What a talented dude. Very sweet dude. Check out HelloMerch.com if you're in a band. They could really help you out. His album, 10 Songs, comes out January 22nd, 2016. You can find out all about him at SamMeansMusic.com, all right? I want to thank my friend Lindsay for hooking all these up. It was a great time talking to these guys on Skype. Did you enjoy the Skype conversation? Go to our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here, and let me know if you liked them, all right? If you do, I'll do more of them, all right? I can reach out to more people. We can get some different kind of folks on the show. Not just, you know, strictly Austin. I've always wanted to see this show as kind of being a worldwide phenomenon. Much like Sam Means. I really enjoyed talking to that dude, man. He's a really talented guy. As I said, if you're in a band, check out HelloMerch.com. It's probably worth your time. Check out his tunes, The Other Side of You and We're Alone, which are on SoundCloud and I think Spotify. So get out there, check him out, sammeansmusic.com. Get involved. Thank you, Sam. And also, thank you to Tommy for coming on the show. Pick up the Narc Twain EP, which is available now. Go to SoundCloud, look up Narc Twain. Everyone have a very great weekend. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Let's get down.
Destiny. You told me that the price of life was never free. Till I saw my history and then the future standing right in front of me. You speak the truth, don't bend the rule. I tried so hard to find something inside of you. It's a whole lot brighter on the other side. On the other side of destiny. You told me that the price of life is